Serving New York State and Southern Ontario, you're listening to WDCX FM Buffalo, WDCX HD1 Buffalo, and WDCZ AM Buffalo. WDCX AM Rochester and WDCX HD1 Rochester.
Welcome to Neil Boron Live. Real talk that gets to the heart of the matter and music that inspires. NBL is the place for information, motivation, and encouragement. So drop the mask, pick up the phone, and get ready to join the conversation at 1-800-684-2848 or 883-5000. And now, here's Neil Bora, live.
Well, hey, everybody. Good to have you with us here on a Monday edition of NBL, a post-Super Bowl Monday edition of the broadcast, I might add. So if any of you are dragging today, we fully understand. I hope you had a chance to spend some time with family and friends yesterday, not only watching the Super Bowl, but God willing, in worship together. And I hope you had a great weekend. My name's Neil, by the way. That's the Zach Man here on WDCX. He is the producer for NBL and also the host of The Breakfast Blend, which airs weekday mornings on our sister station, WDCX HD2, which I think you should check out if you haven't yet. And you can access it via your WDCX app or just go to WDCXradio.com and listen online. It's super simple to do. Today, we're going to talk about human trafficking. Now, the Super Bowl historically has been one of the most prevalent places where human trafficking occurs every single year because of the number of women who are prostituted during the week of the Super Bowl. I know that's hard to listen to, but that's a fact. Human trafficking comes in a lot of forms, including forced labor, and that's actually one of the aspects we're going to look at the beginning of today's program. Amelia Pang will join us. She wrote a book called Made in China, and she literally was a prisoner in a work camp in China. The book is called Made in China, A Prisoner, An SOS Letter, and the hidden agenda of the communist Chinese government, the hidden cost of America's cheap goods. So Amelia Pang joins us on NBL. This
water will never run dry. NBL, 2 to 6 p.m., is a place where you're always welcome. To prove it, we left the light on for you.
Well, thanks again for tuning in, and how about that Super Bowl yesterday? Zach and I were pulling for the Buccaneers because Zach is a lifelong friend of Rob Gronkowski, tight end for the Buccaneers, who scored two touchdowns and really almost a third. I don't know if you saw the play where he got tripped up at the 20-yard line, but if somebody hadn't grabbed his shoelace at the last second, he was about to score on, I think, what would have been about like a 60-yard touchdown pass. Incredible game. I know some of you are not huge Tom Brady fans because Brady and Gronk spent so much time playing the Buffalo Bills over the years. But anyway, they moved on to Tampa Bay for Gronk even after a year of retirement, came out of retirement to meet up with Brady in Tampa Bay, and they win another Super Bowl. Are you kidding me? Wow. Anyway, here we are with start of a brand new week and the lazy days of winter ahead because there's not a whole lot happening now after the Super Bowl until who knows. Till maybe the first hint of spring, till we see the first robin of spring, I think is where it is, and we're just gonna have to hunker in the bunker until then. Well, the conversation we're gonna have today is gonna be a fascinating one. Amelia Pang will join us. Amelia Pang is an accomplished and award-winning author. She's a journalist. She's written for publications like Mother Jones and New Republic. She's covered topics ranging from organic import fraud to the prevalence of sexual violence on Native American reservations. In 2017, the Los Angeles Press Club awarded her first place in investigative journalism for her undercover reporting on the exploitation of smuggled immigrants who are recruited to work in Chinese restaurants. Amelia grew up in a Mandarin-speaking household in Maryland and holds a BA in literary studies from the New School. She lives now near Washington, D.C. with her husband, who himself, by the way, is an organic farmer, and this is her first book. But it's called Made in China. This ought to ring a bell for most of us since we shop at stores where you see labels that say Made in China. It's subtitled The Prisoner, An SOS Letter, and The Hidden Cost of America's Cheap Goods. And by the way, this is not a fiction book. On a fall day in Oregon in 2012, this actually happened, a woman named Julie Keith went looking for a box of cheap Halloween decorations that she'd stored in her shed. When she opened up the package, something shocking fell out. It was an SOS note handwritten in broken English by the Chinese prisoner who had made the items. In Made in China, journalist Amelia Pang traces the life of the note's author, Sun Yi. Arrested for his activism after joining a forbidden meditation practice, he was sent to work in a labor camp alongside petty criminals, civil rights leaders, and others whom the Chinese government decided to, quote, re-educate. They were starving and tortured. He was forced to carve from gravestones, forced to carve foam gravestones and stitch clothing for more than 15 hours a day, but he never sacrificed his principles. You might say, what do you mean carving foam gravestones? Well, remember, this woman in Oregon was searching for Halloween decorations in her storage shed when all of a sudden this note falls out of the box. This is an incredible story, and Amelia Pang ultimately tells the story of what was going on in those labor camps in China and sheds some new light on this entire process of holding people against their will, forcing them to work inhumane hours in inhumane conditions, and all for the purpose of creating cheap goods, which people can buy in other parts of the world, including here in the U.S. So that's what we're going to talk about. Chris Hedges, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author, said, this book is moving and powerful. Amelia Pang puts a human face on the Chinese laborers who work in bondage. And we're going to get to that story when NBL returns here on WDCX. We'll dig in. I hope you'll pull up a chair and join us and listen in as we talk about Made in China, a prisoner, an SOS letter, and the hidden cost of America's cheap goods. Today's program brought to you by Steve Dubé of Coldwell Banker. You'll find him in the Niagara region.
There's a lot of bad news in the world. NBL looks at the bad news in light of the good news.
So thank you for listening all across upstate New York and northwestern Pennsylvania, throughout southern Ontario, Toronto, and beyond. So today we're going to talk about human trafficking in its various forms, and one of those forms is forced labor. It's an issue that we've talked about a number of times on NBL, but probably not in as much detail as we have discussed the issue of sex trafficking as it relates to human trafficking. But this is another aspect entirely. And when I first caught wind of this book, I said, this is something we're going to have to talk about. Because people are often saying, hey, look, I don't want to buy goods in China. I don't really know what the story is about what's going on there, what the conditions are like in China, and how these things are being manufactured. You may be onto something there as we continue this conversation with Amelia Pang. She's an award-winning author. This book from Amelia is called Made in China, A Prisoner, an SOS Letter, and the Hidden Cost of America's Cheap Goods. Amelia, welcome to NBL. It's good to have you here on WDCX. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. A little tired. Watched the Super Bowl last night, so going to have to try to make adjustments here. But this is a fascinating topic to me anyway, and I know to many of our listeners.
Thank you.
We're what's called a border radio station. Now, there's three stations, actually, you're being heard on, two in Buffalo, New York, one in Rochester, but all of them reach southern Ontario. So we have a listening audience in Toronto and beyond, and there are literally millions of people from all over the world who live in this listening area. And as a border station, we've got four immediate border crossings with Canada, which means that human trafficking is a real issue here. It's a real issue everywhere, but it's something that ends up in the news quite a bit. And, you know, when you think about human trafficking, you generally think about third world countries, developing countries. And I guess maybe to some degree people say, well, maybe there's some stuff going on in China, but we don't really know what it's like or what it is. you came across this story and decided to write a book on it, and I commend you for it. It's a powerfully written book. But help us understand the context here, because there's a lot of moving parts. There's the woman who found this note, you know, in a Halloween decoration of some kind. There's the gentleman, Sun Yi, who wrote the note. There's you who authored the book, and a whole bunch of stuff going on. So Maybe give us a little of the history of how you got involved in this yourself and what you can do to help set up the conversation today and the story.
Sure. Well, I found out about this particular note the same time that everyone else did, when it went viral in 2012. An American woman named Julie Keith, a suburban mom, really normal, average American, she got a hold of a brand new package of Halloween decorations from Kmart. And as she's planning her child's birthday party, and who's her child has a birthday near Halloween, and you know, they were just planning to have a nice Halloween-themed party, but as she's opening this package, a very disturbing note falls out. It's written by a political prisoner in China who had made and packaged this very product. So my book really dives into his story, his background. How did he end up in a labor camp? What happened to him in the end? And what we as consumers can do about it, because at the end of the day, it is our shopping habits that contribute to making it really easy for something that was manufactured in a labor camp in Liaoning, China, to end up selling at a Kmart in Portland, Oregon.
That's incredible. Now, you mentioned that it was a brand new product, and that's probably true in one sense, because it was still in its original package, wrapped in cellophane of some kind, and it had not been opened yet, but it was in a storage shed and apparently had been in this woman's backyard, in Julie Keith's backyard, for maybe even a couple of years. So if I'm not mistaken, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, when she finally opened the package and the note fell out, first of all, she wasn't even sure it was real. I mean, after all, it's a Halloween decoration. Maybe it's some kind of a crazy joke somebody tried to play, you know, in packaging this thing or something. But she also had no idea when it was actually written, because who knows how long that package had been on the store shelf in Kmart, and she knew for sure it was a couple years in her shed. Am I right about that? So there were some vague details for her.
Yes, that's correct. It was actually gifted to her. Somebody had purchased it on clearance after Halloween one year, and it was just so cheap. Too cheap to not pass on. But nobody actually had a need for it, so it just sat in Julie's storage shed for about 2 years before she finally remembered that she had this and opened it. So there was a lot of mystery surrounding this letter. How old was it? Is the prisoner even still alive? Is there anything she could do to help him? And of course, if anyone who receives this note will wonder, is this a hoax? It almost sounds too crazy and too disturbing to be real, because the letter stated that they had to work 15 to 20 hours a day. They were paid basically $1 a day to work such long hours, 7 days a week. They were tortured. You know, there were religious dissidents in there. It just sounded like such a disturbing scenario that I think, as many of us Americans, we find it really shocking to believe that this is currently happening.
Yeah, no, I'm going to try to search for that note, because I know it's in here. I read it earlier, and if I can find it in a short time, I want to try to read the note. But let me just ask you this. Obviously, the book ultimately is about Sun Yi, the gentleman who wrote the note, who was working as a political prisoner in China. But you also obviously, tell us about your relationship to Julie Keith and Sun Yi. You did eventually have an opportunity to interview him over, what, something like Skype or whatever, right? Some kind of video conferencing mechanism. And Julie Keith, did you ever meet her in person? Did you have an opportunity? She lives in Portland. I think you're from the D.C. area. Did you have an opportunity to meet her in the writing of this book?
Yeah, she works in Portland, but she lives outside of Portland. I did meet her and interview her in person, and really hung out with her for a bit to really try to capture just her day-to-day life, what it was like to be her. And she really does kind of represent the average American in terms of, she's just a fairly normal person. You know, she's a mom of two kids. You know, she works a lot, and, you know, in her free time, she pretty much dedicates to all her kids, and she has a husband, and you know, it was just so shocking for her to receive this letter, and it really put her on a journey to try to be more cognizant of how made in China products are actually made and what she could do as consumer to shop more sustainably.
Right. And the reason I asked about her, and again, the book is about Sun Yi primarily, but she plays a role because she's the one who discovered this note and brought it to the attention of people on social media, ultimately to your attention in that sense. You end up writing a book about it. And, you know, we not only know a lot more, but a lot more has been done about this issue since Sun Yi originally wrote the note. But here's the thing. She really is indicative of kind of the average American who just goes to the store and buys stuff and doesn't really pay attention. Sometimes sees, you know, the made in China label, but doesn't really know, you know, if it really means much, what the big deal is. But I guess the question I want to ask you, and you may have learned this in interviewing her, I suppose you did. What compelled her to pursue this? Because she had, her husband was a little skeptical. She had friends who said, you know, it's probably not a big deal. She probably just let it go. It could be fake. Why was she so tortured by this? Did she ever really say?
She just thought that if the note was real, the cost was too high. You know, it took the political prisoners, so he risked so much to get this letter to her. And since she finally found it, she had to do something with it, even if there was only a chance that it was real. And it was real. It was verified by multiple media outlets, including the New York Times and CNN. So she really put a lot of effort into publicizing it, whether it's talking to the media, trying to contact the people in the U.S. government who could help her look into it as well. And I just want to also touch on the fact that, you know, this is just one letter in one camp, but there are so many labor camps just like this across China, holding many different demographics. A lot of them are political prisoners, such as pro-democracy activists. You know, there's religious dissidents, like the underground Christians, the Falun Gong group, and there's Muslims who are in there, and there's ethnic minorities, such as the Uyghurs, the Turkic minority that are currently, a lot of them are detained. You know, there's Tibetans, and there's civil rights lawyers who try to defend these people who often end up in these camps. And they're held there indefinitely without trial. They've never gone, most of them have not gone through a court and received a sentencing. They were just placed there arbitrarily by the police. And, you know, they don't really have access to lawyers. There's a lot of people who die in these camps and are just buried in unmarked graves. And pretty much everyone in these camps have to do manufacturing work. I actually went to China to visit the camps. And, you know, when you arrive at the campsite, I was surprised at how comfortable the guards were with talking to people who said they were with a supplier or with a particular overseas company. I told them I was from an overseas company that wanted to source products from them, and it sounded like, you know, this is something they did all the time. They had these relationships all the time, and it was not really something strange or new for them, the fact that I showed up asking to source from them. And they were very open with what they made. They offered to give me a tour, almost like a little bit too professional for labor camps. You know, they almost seemed like salespeople who had been trained to sell, to maximize the amount of products they could sell from these camps. And you know, I spent a lot of time following the trucks that left these camps to see exactly which suppliers or which exporters they were working with. And they were maybe making all kinds of products for so many different types of factories. There was a pharmaceutical that they were working with. You know, there was a factory that made school supplies that, you know, shipped all over the world, including to the U.S. When you look at the customs records, they actually ship products to the U.S. There's not much these camps are not making.
Did you at any point feel that you were being surveilled? Because in a country that does so much surveillance, obviously you were surveilling them, but I'm wondering if you were being surveilled in the process.
I actually went on a tourism visa instead of a journalism visa, and I think that helped a lot. If you go on a journalism visa, you have more protection, but the moment you arrive, the moment you land in the airport, they know you've arrived, basically, and the police are going to follow you the entire time. They're going to detain you and try to waste your time to keep you from getting any reporting done. But going on a tourism visa was more risky, but I actually didn't get caught and managed to go under the radar.
Well, thank God for that, because today we have the story called Made in China, the prisoner and SOS letter, and the hidden cost of America's cheap goods. So try to imagine, Sun Yi writes this note, and I'm going to read it here, but it ends up in a package which ends up in the United States and isn't even opened for a number of years. You got to wonder what he was thinking. Did anyone get my note? Did anyone ever read my note? What's the status? You know, is help on the way or not? And what a hopeless feeling that must be. And you did allude to this earlier, Amelia, but this isn't the only note that's ever been found in packaging from China. There have been a number of stories very similar to this. In fact, the number's growing. But here's what the note said. This woman, young woman, Julie Keith, you know, average kind of American mom type person getting ready to decorate for Halloween, opens this package and a note drops out. It was written in blue ink. The handwriting was neat, but the letter was filled with crossed out words and broken English. The author had added a few Asian characters in parentheses. It looked like an early draft of something, Amelia Pang writes in her book, Made in China. She says, Julie froze as she read the message, and here it is. If you occasionally buy this product, please kindly resend this letter to the World Human Rights Organization. Thousands of people here who are under the persecution, spelled wrong, of the Chinese Communist Party government will thank and remember you forever. She was bewildered. Is this a prank? She thought. She kept reading. It said, this product was produced by Unit 8, Department 2, Mashanjai Labor Camp, Shenyang, Liaoning, China. You can help me with the pronunciation later. Then there's some Chinese characters. It goes on to say, people who work here have to work 15 hours a day without Saturday, Sunday break, and any holidays. Otherwise, they will suffer torturement, beat, and rude remark. No nearly payment, 10 yuan per month. People who work here suffer punishment 1 to 3 years averagely, but without court sentence, unlaw punishment. Many of them are Falun Gong practitioner who are totally innocent people only because they have different belief to CCPG, that's the Communist Party. They often suffer more punishment than others. So, wow, you read this, and if you even suspect for a minute that it's true, your heart has to be racing, like, what do I do now? And that's where Julie Keith enters the story. It was some time before you got on board, Amelia, but you decided to eventually write a book about this, having eventually found this gentleman, Sun Yi, and having interviewed him, and we're going to dig into that in just a moment. So if you can hang on, we'll take a break here, and we'll continue in a moment. By the way, Made in China from Amelia Pang is available at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, and I think, Amelia, you said wherever books are sold, right? So we will continue the conversation here on NBL in just a moment. I hope you can stick around and order a copy of Made in China. It's a fascinating story written by an award-winning journalist. We'll be back after this from Atrial Toyota.
Take a deep breath. It's going to be okay. You're listening to NBL on WDZX.
Thanks again for listening in all over Western New York and Southern Ontario, Northwestern Pennsylvania, and via the internet. Some of you listening in other parts of the world or other parts of the country. Amelia Pang, award-winning author, our guest. We're talking about her most recent book. It just came out on Tuesday last week, called Made in China, A Prisoner, an SOS Letter, and the Hidden Cost of America's Cheap Goods. We'll never make up all the ground if we don't just kind of jump ahead here, but this young woman, Julie Keith, finds this note. It's written by a political prisoner in China. The question is he real? Is this note real? You end up going to investigate on some kind of a tourism visa and collect a whole lot of information in the process. Did you actually get to meet Sun Yi on this trip, or were you just able to verify that the camp existed? Tell us about that, because eventually you did connect with him, and how did that even happen?
I connected through him through a human rights activist, because he was a political prisoner, and he had been pretty active in trying to, you know, find ways to contact Western media and journalists and getting his story told. But I didn't I was reluctant to meet with activists in China because a lot of them tend to be followed pretty closely by the police. And mm-hmm. if I talk to them, then I'm going to get followed too. So it's easier. I really wanted to prioritize documenting with which exporters were working with these factories, and thought it was easier if I just didn't talk to anyone and just followed the trucks, and I stuck to that plan.
Yeah, and obviously you had to be thinking about your own well-being in the process, because I wouldn't think this is something that China's proud of. And you said being there on a tourism visa and kind of asking questions as though you were like a buyer, for instance, somebody who might be, you know, conducting business with China. It seems like they gave you the grand tour, like the public relations tour of this labor camp. And yet these people were living under very difficult conditions. Was any of that obvious to you when you saw it with your own eyes?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is obvious, but I think a lot of they know a lot of Chinese suppliers don't care, and a lot of companies don't care. A lot of people who are looking for cheap places to source just care about how quickly it can be made mm-hmm. and how cheap the price is. One of the more I think sadder things that I've discovered during my reporting was that, you know, a lot of times the factors that really compel and push factories to outsource work to forced labor camps are actually deeply connected to us as consumers and the way that we shop. Let's say there's, you know, companies like H&M or Walmart or Kmart who put in an order for 100,000 black hats, but then all of a sudden a celebrity starts wearing lime green, and now everybody wants lime green hats. So because consumers are looking for this product and willing to buy it for an incredible, and just hoping it will get made fast, these companies, in order to really maximize their profit on the latest trend, they'll want to change all of their orders for black hats to lime green hats, or put in a really quick order that could be made as quickly as possible for lime green hats so that they could sell it to a bunch of people who are willing to buy it. And so when that happens, if the company doesn't give the Chinese factory enough time to realistically make 100,000 lime green hats, then a lot of times the factory has no choice but to outsource work to somewhere really shady, like a forced labor camp where prisoners can be forced to stay up 24 hours to make the product if they have to meet the deadline. There's nobody watching out for them. So that's something that we as consumers actually have control of, and our corporations actually have control of. Like the next time we go shopping at our favorite brand's website, just stop and take a moment to look at their sustainability page or their corporate social responsibility page and see if they're actually revealing how much time they give factories to make products. And what is their process if they decide that they want to make a sudden production change? Do they waive fees? Do they extend the deadline? Like, this type of information is not often revealed in a so-called transparency page. But if we really want to be transparent, we need to start asking corporations to be transparent about key things that are pushing factories to outsource work to labor camps.
You know, if this gets made into a movie someday, then you're hoping that at the end of the movie, everyone gets to meet each other, you know, and there's a wonderful, happy ending. Sun Yi ends up in freedom, you know, living in democracy somewhere, enjoying freedom and life and all of that. But that's not how this story actually ends. In many ways, it's an ongoing story because the problem isn't going away. Is anything being done on a government level to address this? I mean, obviously, the intelligence community knows these kind of things exist. Why do we do business with China if this is happening there?
Well, everything is manufactured in China. It's really hard to not source from China. And it's not that all Chinese factories are bad or that all Chinese factories are associated with labor camps. A lot of times there are suppliers that want to do the right thing and not source from forced labor, but there's so many factories in China, and they're also competitive with each other. Mm-hmm. Getting for one factory, if they have an opportunity to get a contract with a big brand like Walmart, Kmart, H&M, or even more expensive brand, it's such a big deal to them to get a contract with a major global brand like that that would order large amounts of products from them. So they will do everything they can to meet their requests, even if they don't have the capacity to do so, whether that means they have to outsource some of the work, or if they're not paid enough to actually make the work in-house, they have to outsource it to even cheaper facilities where there's a lot of labor abuses. I think the more that consumers are aware of this, then we can actually start to create change by knowing how to hold our companies accountable. I guess in terms of government policies, although the book focuses on Ma Sinjia, I do, which is a labor camp that held all kinds of people, I do want to point out that in recent years, the development and expansion of the Uyghur re-education camps has been happening at an exceedingly fast rate. The Uyghurs are these Turkic minority Muslims living mostly in Xinjiang, China, and they are currently an estimated somewhere between 1.5 million to 3 million Uyghurs and other Turkic people detained in these camps. And that's just for one demographic in mm-hmm. China in labor camps. There's a lot of other demographics too. And so for the Uyghurs, the situation is pretty severe for them. A lot of them have to make everything from clothing to human hair extension to the raw materials for solar panels. And a lot of these products are getting exported to the U.S. and Canada and all over the world. Because there's just so many Uyghurs detained, and it's the reason why it's detained is a race-based detention. There has been some U.S. policies that has been passed trying to address the issue. There was a ban on all cotton and tomato products from Xinjiang because those products were very, very heavily associated with forced labor. And there was also a ban on products that the China's paramilitary organization was sending over, and that was also a lot of that was in Xinjiang and was very much associated with Uyghur forced labor. So there were some specific products, specific regions that were banned, but currently we're still seeing a lot of forced labor goods made by Uyghurs that are entering U.S. ports. I guess to give a little bit more context, just last year, the Australian Strategic Policy Institute documented 82 major global brands that were using Uyghur forced labor. And these weren't even necessarily cheap brands. There were some pretty expensive brands on that list, mm-hmm. including BMW, Mercedes-Benz, Nikes, and Lacoste. Although this report was released a year ago, there hasn't been, most of those suppliers are still sourcing from these factories. They haven't really announced any indication that they will drop these suppliers despite standing information. And this comes back to us as consumers not caring. If we want, and the corporations do respond to consumer demand. So we got to start showing corporations that we care and we don't want especially if we're paying high prices for a Nike, we don't want you to be using forced labor.
Yeah, imagine. There's so much more to talk about. When we come back from our break, I want to find out what happened to Sun Yi, because he's the subject of this book, obviously, his story, and where we go from here. I mean, you've outlined already a number of things that we can do to stand against this form of forced labor, human trafficking. in places like China. Just one example of where it's happening in the world. This book is fascinating. You can get it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever books are sold. Amelia Pang, P-A-N-G, is the author. The book is called Made in China. We'll be back with more of NBL in just a moment. Right after this from Ryan McKean and his professional construction team at McKean Construction.
Fortunately, there are no emojis to accurately represent the insight, depth, and quality of stuff you, Neil, and the Zach Man talk about on NBL, which means none of us are out of a job. Yet.
Yet. All right, so we're back at it here. Amelia Pang is an award-winning author. Her book, Made in China, is available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. She also has a website, ameliapang.com, P-A-N-G. I encourage you to check it out. You can follow her work there and learn about some of the other books she's written. And I don't know, do you do a regular blog or anything like that, Amelia?
I do have a newsletter people can find where I give updates.
Okay. All right. So we want to find out what happened to Sun Yi. Now, it's my understanding that Julie Keith, who found the note from this Chinese forced labor camp prisoner, that she actually met him in person. Is that correct?
Yes, she did end up eventually having an opportunity to meet him. He really wanted to thank her for bringing awareness to his note.
Now, he died, apparently, and I guess fairly suddenly. Now, you had interviewed him a number of times over something similar to Skype, I guess. What can you tell us about what you learned from him regarding his desire? Meaning, he wrote the note, but not for his own sake as much as for the sake of others who were stuck in forced labor camps. How do you summarize what he was hoping would happen as a result of originally writing that note?
He really hoped that it would lead to a closure of the camps. And to some extent it did. China claimed that they had closed all re-education through labor camps, which was the type of facility that he was detained in. But unfortunately, all of the camps that China claimed to have closed have reopened as with a new name. They're called compulsory isolation drug detox centers now. A lot of them are called that instead of re-education through labor camps. But these are not drug rehab centers. Especially, you can tell the name compulsory isolation.
Mm-hmm.
The people detained in there don't, even if they are drug addicts, they don't have any access to recovery care or mental health tools. They pretty much all have to do manufacturing work. Human Rights Watch did a great report on just how awful these drug detox centers are, and how the drug use is actually still quite rampant in these facilities, even though they claim to be a drug detox center.
Well, at the back of the book says this, and I just want to read it quickly. It says, in telling Sun Yi's story, Pang, that's you, Amelia Pang, reveals the true origins of the inexpensive products we've become so dependent on, as well as their human and environmental costs. Made in China is a powerful narrative of individual bravery, a revealing look at the relationship between the United States and this major trading partner, an expose of illegal labor in the world's most populous country, and most important, a profoundly illuminating call to action about the true cost of our desire for the cheapest, newest goods. So with about a minute and a half to go, I just want to give you an opportunity to speak from your heart, Amelia, because I believe you're a different person having been exposed to what you've seen and heard and now communicated in your book, Made in China. But what message do you want to leave with our listeners today? You've kind of alluded to a few things, but you got the floor right now, so take it.
Thank you. While many of the scenes in this book are very disturbing, I'm sure you have heard a lot of disturbing details about what it's like to be in a forced labor camp in China. But I want to end on a note of hope. There are things that we can do as consumers to really stop and significantly decrease the amount of forced labor goods that are entering our stores and our homes. And that's what my book ultimately is about. It highlights key things that you can do.
Well, and that is a good word of hope, because there is something we can do. And it doesn't leave us scratching our heads wondering why this exists, but we can't do anything about it. No, we can get involved. And I'd say one place to start is to get the book, to educate yourself on what actually is happening in China and why it matters how we shop. and what we do about these kind of things in the future. So, Amelia, God bless you in your continued efforts to write and expose these kinds of things. You've done an exceptional job, and I certainly hope people will check you out at ameliapang.com or get a copy of your book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But thanks for being with us here on NBL. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right,
God
bless.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Amelia Pang, P-A-N-G, and ameliapang.com is where you can go to learn more about her work. Made in China, available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. I would imagine that if you want to ask at Cornerstone Bookshop, they could also order you a copy and have it available for pickup, either curbside or have it shipped out to you, because they are doing online ordering. In fact, the site-wide sale is on right now at Cornerstone Bookshop. Big savings await you on all kinds of products at Cornerstone. Go to cornerstonebookshop.ca to learn more. We'll be back right after this.